It's time now to go beyond the headlines. And for the next 2 hours, go where every sports fan wants to go. Behind the scenes and into the practice facilities, locker rooms, coaches' offices, and press boxes to get the info before anyone else. This is the ESPN 1320 Insiders.
Man, there's a lot to unpack on a Monday. I almost called you and like, hey, we got to start the show at 8.
Yeah, it was a busy,
a lot to do.
Busy weekend.
Yeah, we got a lot to do. That's James Hamm. I'm Kyle Madsen. Joe Brazil's with us. We're sponsored by Jiffy Lube, and we've got a ton to unpack from the NBA Finals Game 7 last night. The Oklahoma City Thunder, of course, if you're listening to this program, I'm sure you know that the Oklahoma City Thunder won the NBA Finals. Their first NBA championship since moving to Oklahoma City in 2008. Congratulations to them. Man, there's so many layers to this because I want to, the Tyrese Haliburton injury obviously kind of casts a pall over the entire game when he went down 7 minutes in, but we have to separate that because I think the bottom line to all of this is I think we were robbed of a really, really incredible game. We still got a pretty good game seven, but a really, I think, knockdown, drag out, down to the final seconds type of game seven. But I still feel like the right team won.
I agree.
Oklahoma City was the best team in the league all year. So while we were, I think the Pacers did not get to give their best shot at it without Tyrese Haliburton. And while I think we got a worse game because of it, I don't walk away feeling like, oh, the wrong team is hoisting the trophy this year.
Yeah, I totally agree. I think when we look at the road and home splits in this series, there were certain players that just could not function on the road.
That's it.
And they were really, really good at home, but some players, you know, again, like Chet Holmgren really struggled on the road. Mm-hmm. At home, he was a monster. And if you had all three of your big guys going, there was no way that that team was going to lose. At least I didn't think that they were going to lose. And to be honest with you, like, look, they proved that they were the best team in the league. They won 18 more regular season games than the Indiana Pacers. And
that's cool.
The Pacers put up a fight, and it was a valiant fight, but when that injury hit, it just shook the entire game.
Yep.
Right? And it wasn't just that, you know, you lost your best player, your playmaker. He was also firing away. You lost your, like, we all talk about this skill that Tyrese Haliburton has to talk.
Mm-hmm.
Like, his ability to walk in front of the media and just be honest and forthright and intelligent and articulate.
Mm-hmm.
He's the same behind the scenes. When you see that guy, the guy that you count on for so many things, not just to be, you know, the head of the snake on the court, but to be one of your leaders and really the vocal leader of a team, a guy who mm-hmm. goes out and represents you in every single situation. When you see him go down like that, and everybody in the building knows what happened. It was just so devastating, man. Yeah. So devastating.
As soon as the way that went down, and I want to make sure we do talk about Oklahoma City because they were unbelievable this year.
Yeah,
they because they're going to be shell shocked too. Like there's something, and they were pointing this out on the broadcast. There's something that they have to overcome mentally too of not going, oh, Haliburton's out, we're going to win.
Yeah.
And not just kicking their feet up and getting punched in the mouth and all of a sudden they're down 10, right? But you knew it was bad. So Tyrese Haliburton falls down while making and turns it over. And in the middle of calling the break, because the camera, obviously Halliburton's on the other side of the court, the camera's not on him. And in the middle of his call, Mike Breen said, and Halliburton's hurt.
Mm.
And when that is, you know, like Mike Breen's one of the best play-by-play guys to ever do it.
Yeah.
He recognized what was happening and knew the fact that he knew to let us know that Haliburton, in mid-play, that Haliburton is hurt on that play.
Yeah.
He wouldn't have done that if he was just kind of still laying on the ground. He was doing that because he saw the reaction from Tyrese Halliburton. And, I mean, it's just devastating. It hit this weird emotional note for me where you see this guy who is in a game seven who said, if I can walk, I want to play.
Yeah.
And he goes down and didn't just go down. And you see sometimes a guy gets hurt and he turns over and they'll just point and they'll be like, eh. Like, eh, all right. But, like, the release of emotion from him, and like you said, that's him. That's he's going to get out. He's going to put it all out there for everybody. And the fact that it was really, really hard to not feel that emotion coming out of the TV screen when you saw him on the ground recognizing that his season is over, his team season is over, his next season might be over. He's not going to get a chance to contribute for the final 41 minutes of this game.
Yeah.
Just a brutal, brutal situation, man.
Well, that and, you know, being in the building when a couple of these have happened, these right. Achilles tears, his reaction was absolutely identical to Rudy Gay's.
Yeah.
Like, I was up on the NBC booth. It's where I mm-hmm. used to sit and watch the game. And Rudy Gay came down, went to take a step, and collapses in the middle of the floor and is mm-hmm. right below me, and he's looking up towards me and he's just hitting the floor with his fist. It was so reminiscent.
Mm-hmm.
And the play just keeps going and somebody's career is like in the balance. Yeah. And it's such a horrible thing to see happen. And like everyone knew. It's not like there was a question.
Oh.
It's not like, oh, he might have like hurt his calf a little worse. Nope, we all knew right away and then
immediately.
And then ESPN made sure that we knew.
Jesus.
Like, that was, like, I don't even understand what was happening with their production crew. We did not need to see Tyrese Halliburton's Achilles rupture on camera at least 45 times.
It was excessive.
Yeah.
Like, we don't, you show it once, and you go, oh, man, okay, like, yeah, we got it.
Yeah.
We saw it. And I understand they're trying to make sure that, you know, not everybody's locked in for the first 7 minutes. There might be mm-hmm. people who show up in the middle of the second quarter or in the second half, whatever it is. And they've got to, you know, update people. Here's what happened to Tyrese Halliburton. But you don't have to show it. You don't have to show it every single time in super slow motion. And then we're going to get the zoom in on his crying face while he pounds a foot. No, we understand.
Yeah.
You can just let us know Tyrese Halliburton is out officially with a lower leg injury, and his dad told Lisa Salters it's an Achilles. We got it.
Yeah, we got it.
The slow motion replay was I don't understand. This is separate from the game, obviously, but they won't show a nasty knee injury or a nasty ankle injury. They won't show. I don't need to see an Achilles snap over and 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 over again, especially in the middle of an awesome basketball game.
Yeah. Man, there was a point where there was someone shooting free throws, and they just ran the clip.
Yep,
right in the middle and then they cut it short. We're like, "What exactly are you doing?"
It was frustrating. Like they lost their ever-loving minds.
Yeah.
And while we're here, while we're doing the ESPN thing, I cannot believe this is not a Kyle Madsen original thought that ESPN's NBA coverage is sorely lacking. That they went to halftime. First of all, Stephen A. Smith got cut off by commercials in the middle of a rant. So they go to commercial after the half ends. They come back and Stephen A. Smith starts screaming about how, and I like Stephen A. Smith, by the way, typically I'm sick of him, starts screaming about how someone needs to step up. That's not analysis. That's first take. Jalen Williams needs to step up in this game right now or he's not Scottie Pippen. Like, okay, man, whatever. You had Bob Myers on your panel, okay?
Yep.
Look, I don't think Bob Myers is great on TV, but Bob Myers was the general manager of the Golden State Warriors or president of basketball operations for the Golden State Warriors when Kevin Durant had a calf strain, tried to come back during the finals, and blew his Achilles a few minutes into the game.
Yep.
Bob Myers got on television in front of the nation and cried about this. He cried real tears in a press conference about Kevin Durant doing the exact same thing that Tyrese Halliburton did. Don't you think it'd be really valuable to go, hey, Bob, you're on this panel. What do you do here? If you're the Pacers, what are the emotions in the locker room? What are the emotions for the players? What are you doing with Tyrese Halliburton? There are so many things you can find out from Bob Myers, who has firsthand experience with this, and instead we've got Stephen A. Smith literally reading the box score and then saying that the players who don't have big numbers in the box score need to have bigger numbers in the box score. Thanks. Glad we got this.
Yeah, I don't
just know. Just horrible. It was brutal.
I don't understand why that's part of the NBA coverage for the finals. Why do we need someone yelling? They're yelling over the top of each other the entire break. It is so nerve-wracking, and you're just sitting there like this stress level, the tension that's coming through your TV. You're just like, what in the world are we doing here? Like, this is not, it's not entertaining at all. And it's just bad. It's just bad television.
Yeah.
Yeah, and like really, really difficult. The entirety of it, like whether it was like clip after clip after clip of Ty on the ground, or it was like going in and talking to some guys that just really have no respect for each other and are just like trying to show up the other people on the panel and like no way to control what's happening. Like I really, really hope there's changes. And I think it's a good thing that the TNT crew is going to be, you know, doing ESPN games, right? That's who's going to be
some of them.
The like out front and center. That's a good thing to me, because for what we saw yesterday was just like completely unacceptable. And I didn't even have the sound on. Like we weren't even listening with the sound on. We were at a sports bar watching the game and just like very, very upset with everything that was happening. But then we went home, watched halftime. It's like, oh my gosh, just
it's like
a turn separate, it off.
It's like a separate thing from the game. You're taking away from the game at that point.
Oh, fully taken away.
The Pacers had a lead at halftime after Tyrese Halliburton got hurt. A minor miracle, right? And Shams Charania has confirmed it's a torn Achilles for Tyrese Halliburton, just kind of confirming what we already knew. So that's now official.
Yeah, it's official.
So it's taking away from the game, and that's the problem for me. The fact that the Pacers rallied the way they did after Tyrese Halliburton went down and didn't even do the thing where they went down like 10 because they were just so shell-shocked. They got right back in. They took a lead into halftime. The story there, to me, is, holy crap, how did the Pacers do that? Not, somebody from Oklahoma City has to step up!
Yeah.
Like, all right. It just doesn't. It doesn't do it for me, man. And then they cut off Stephen A. Smith to go to more commercials. I think that had to be an accident. And then they still found a way to get him his rant in that he had queued up about players stepping up. I don't know, man. The point in the game where it couldn't quite feel over because it's still the Pacers, and they've just defied odds all season. But where the game really flipped was Miles Turner, with 8.5 minutes to go in the third quarter, hits a three. It ties the game at 56. And Miles Turner had not hit the broadside of a barn all playoffs.
He was not
or
good.
All series.
Yeah.
So he cashes this three finally. Ties the game. Shai Gilgeous-Alexander comes back down, answers with a three. TJ McConnell turnover. Chet Holmgren, three. TJ McConnell turnover. Jalen Williams, three. All of a sudden, it goes from tie game to 9-point game in 1:07.
Yeah, that moment there where McConnell just couldn't—he just ran himself into trouble.
Yep,
like multiple times. It was like, oh man, composure, dude.
Yep,
he just lost his composure, and it was boom, boom, boom. And that is the true gift of the Oklahoma City Thunder.
That's it.
They have a way of hitting you so hard, so quickly. And just like lights out, like they can knock anybody out like that quick. And watching them like find their footing in a really tense moment, right? You're still, everyone is trying to recover from the Halliburton injury, but to sit there and like just hit a team and then put them away, that is what we saw all season long from that team. They had their home crowd behind them. I think if it was in Indiana, it probably would have been a little different. because sure. that's what we saw throughout this series, that the home team really had an advantage. Mm-hmm. But like it was tough to watch. But that, again, that is why the Thunder are the best team in basketball. That yep. they are the best team in basketball. There's no question about it. I hate that their championship, their game seven, is taken away by such a bad injury.
Mm-hmm.
It's sort of what happens in these situations. But my goodness, like what an incredible team, what an incredible franchise. Mm-hmm. And, you know, they're building something. This is going to be a team that we're going to see again and again and again over the next 5 to 7 years.
Yep, it sure feels that way. So we've got to talk about the Tyrese Haliburton injury in the context of the other two Achilles tears in the NBA playoffs.
Yeah.
And whether the NBA is going to finally take their schedule as a player safety issue. We'll dive into that. Kevin Durant got traded yesterday. FYI, in case the NBA needed more news, the draft is on Wednesday, by the way. So Kevin Durant got traded. We'll talk about that and what it means for the Kings, what it means for Houston. You talk about Oklahoma City being dominant. Is Houston now on that level? We'll talk about the Kings' place in the NBA hierarchy. And, of course, the NBA draft is Wednesday. ESPN dropped a new mock draft. And at least Joe and I don't know where you land, James, are obsessed with the guy that they have going to the Kings. We'll talk about that as well. All that coming up in the next couple hours. That's James Hamm. I'm Kyle Madsen. Joe Brazil's behind the glass. We're the Insider, sponsored by Jiffy Lube. This is ESPN 1320 at Sacramento Sports Leader.
You're listening to The Insiders with James Hamm and Kyle Madsen, sponsored by Jiffy Lube on ESPN 1320 and 98.5 HD2, Sacramento Sports Leader. Insiders with James Hamm and Kyle Madsen, brought to you by Jiffy Lube on ESPN 1320.
He's James, I'm Kyle. Joe's over there. Nice series win for the Giants this weekend, Joe. Rafael Devers got his first home run.
Now we're talking.
Love to see it. Love to see it for your guys.
I don't think he's going to have too much trouble out there. I like the way he can hit to any part of the field, and
a lefty going out Oppo Taco at Oracle Park is crazy.
You never see it.
That's banana sandwich, bro. That's just ridiculous.
But I think we're going to start seeing a little more.
Yeah, I think so too. Just ridiculous power from Rafi Devers. All right, let's talk about this Tyrese Haliburton injury stuff because he joined Damian Lillard and Jason Tatum as players with Achilles tears this postseason, and we're reaching a point, and I think that there's more to this discussion than, well, back in the 70s and 80s, they played all the games, because it's a larger discussion than 82 games now versus 82 games then. And players are soft now and they didn't used to be. What we run into now is players are coming into the leagues. ESPN did a whole thing about this. I think it was 2017. About how players are coming into the league now because of the AAU circuit and because of all the basketball that kids are playing growing up now to stay in recruiting circles and to play basketball, to advance their careers.
Yep.
Guys are entering the league now at 18, 19, 20 years old with the tendons and ligaments of 30, 31, 32-year-olds. It's a scientific thing.
Yeah.
And a scientific thing I am not qualified to or am going to explain. You can find this article. It's on ESPN.
Yeah.
It's not currently on ESPN. I forget. Russell Baxter, I believe, wrote it. So on top of all that, you're getting this 82-game schedule, and then you're getting a 4-7 game playoff rounds where the games very quickly start going every other day. On top of a style of play that is faster, more spread out, more up and down. Lately, it's been very physical to boot. It is not tenable, I don't think. Like what the NBA is looking at is a player safety problem right now. You have 8 Achilles tears this year around the NBA.
Oh, that's crazy.
That's too many. And now you have stars. You have Jason Tatum, one of the faces of your league, ideally over the next 5 or 6 years.
Mm-hmm.
Had his career altered by this. Tyrese Halliburton, same deal. You got robbed of an awesome game 7 because you still got a pretty good game.
Mm-hmm.
You got robbed of an awesome game 7 because of this injury to Tyrese Halliburton. Damian Lillard isn't going to get to ride off into the sunset because, hey, you know what? His career might just kind of be over now.
Yeah. And a team owes him $55 million in each of the, and then I think 60 next year.
Man.
55 next year, 60, 59 the year after that.
So I think at some point people always go, well, the NBA is not going to cut their season short. Are players going to take less money? Like, man, they might.
Okay,
they might if it means not tearing their Achilles.
There's a couple of problems that I think that need to be worked out. Number one, having kids play one sport is not the right way to do things.
That's correct.
Right? So that's number one. Like when I was a kid, I played baseball, I played football, I played basketball, yep. I played volleyball. Like you play all kinds of sports all the time. That is not at all what happens now.
Nope.
Like my oldest played so much soccer, competitive soccer, that he overdeveloped his quads so bad that we thought he pulled a groin, but it wasn't that. It's that his quads were so overdeveloped that it grabbed the top of his hip muscle and pulled it into the hip socket.
Gross.
So we had to go do PT and figure out a way to get his glutes to fire and his hamstrings to engage. And these are the things that happen. Like, you go out to, again, because I help.
With sports specialization, you mean?
Yeah, with sports specialization. So I go out and I try to work with the kids on the soccer team.
Mm-hmm.
You go, okay, who wants to be the goalkeeper? And everyone just kind of looks around like, I don't want to be the goalkeeper. And you get one kid to raise your hand. It's like, okay, what other sports do you play? Well, I don't really play any other sports. Like, what do you mean? They don't know how to field a ground ball like a shortstop. They don't know how to go up high for
a rebound.
For a rebound, or like a football player knows how to go over the middle and reach up and catch a ball above his head. Mm-hmm. Don't know how to do it. They don't know how to make a triangle with their hands. You're sitting here like, what in the world is happening? But with the basketball kids, they are playing nonstop, and it's the same repetitive motion again and again and again.
Yep.
So they're putting all this strain on very specific body parts that are going to be the body parts that break down when they're in their 20s and 30s.
Yep.
And that's part of the problem. The other problem I'm going to point out is that NBA teams do not share information with each other about injury risk and about injury maintenance.
Mm-hmm.
They don't. It's proprietary technology. So when I tell you guys about how the players come in, before they go out on the court, they jump on these metal plates, right? Mm-hmm. They're these big, like, rubber, like, mats with, mm-hmm. with these metal plates that are inserted that, like, count deceleration, acceleration, like, force, all that stuff. And the teams are, like, monitoring. They go mm-hmm. out, they warm up, they come back, they do it one more time before they go into the locker room and get ready for the game.
Mm-hmm.
It's a team's way of just monitoring a player's, like, physical, like, readiness, right? So if you're wearing like a Aura ring,
mm-hmm.
an Aura ring tells you what your readiness score is. And if you're like, oh man, my readiness score says I'm like a 65, and you go out and you walk and you're like, I literally feel like a 65 today. That's not good.
Yeah.
And then other days you're like, oh, my readiness says I'm like a 92. You get out there, you're like, holy cow, I'm like springing. Mm-hmm. Like, there is technology that's out there that does help with these things, but the teams aren't sharing it with each other. Mm-hmm. And so there isn't some massive database that's telling everybody, hey, this is what our predictions are for this type of injury. You can see a player start his performance mm-hmm. to lag, and you say, okay, we need to cut back on practice time, or we need to shave some minutes off in mm-hmm. a game, or maybe he needs to take 2 games off, right?
Mm-hmm.
And you see if their body recovers. Those are things that are happening behind the scenes, but when you get to game 7, when you get to even a game 6, in the NBA finals, like, all bets are off. Half of these players are out there with injuries that shouldn't be playing.
Mm-hmm.
But that's the game.
Mm-hmm.
And so I don't blame Ty. I don't blame the medical. I don't blame it. Bad things happen. He took a risk. The team took a risk. They knew the risk 100%. He knew the risk. And he said, okay, I'm going to put my career on the line and go out there, try and win game seven.
Yeah, man. Like that, the need for everything to become a take.
Yeah.
Is just like, it's not anyone's fault.
Yeah.
Like if this was November, Tyrese Haliburton would not have been playing. Facts. Mm-hmm. The minute he strained his calf, he would have been out 2-3 weeks, however long necessary. Remember, Trey Lyles, before the 23-24 season,
mm-hmm.
dealt with the calf injury and yep. was out like weeks.
Well, same thing this season. He sat for a huge stretch of time
this
season.
Was that this year?
No, it was both.
Oh, okay.
He right coming into last season,
mm-hmm.
he strained his calf. And they sat him for like first 4 weeks of the season.
It was a long time.
And then this season, again, he had a moment where he had a calf strain.
Yeah.
Again, like it's, you can predict, like the calf is like the easiest one of yes. all of them.
Yeah.
It's the easiest one to predict a catastrophic injury.
Yep.
And that's why I said it last week. Like you could easily like watch him go out there and everything's fine and then it's not and it's yep. over.
That's literally what happened. Game six, like. Oh, okay, yeah, not 100%, but looks pretty good.
Yeah.
Cooking in game one, in game seven yesterday, and then one step, didn't even like, not just a step forward to go to
yeah.
dribble and just.
And I did not want to be right at all.
No.
At all. But like, this is the sport.
Well, it's the risk that's inherent here. It's why this wasn't a. Oh man, he's got a shoulder issue that might affect his bicep.
Yeah.
Like this wasn't no, everybody knows, hey, the risk with a calf, the reason this is such a monumental deal on should he play, should he not?
Mm-hmm.
It's not, man, he's going to play on a sprained ankle and he might turn that ankle again.
Yeah.
It's hey, he's going to play on this calf and he might pop his Achilles.
Yeah, it's just like if he has a partially torn ACL, bad idea.
Right.
Bad idea. Like,
but if he had that and was able to walk, he was going to play. Like yeah. that's the thing. Is nobody lied to Tyrese Haliburton here.
Nope.
Tyrese Haliburton was not forced to play. He said, "This is game seven. I've waited my whole life for this. I'm 48 minutes away from an NBA championship. I can walk. Mm-hmm. I can conceive. I can go out there and I can give effort. I'm going to play." And the worst possible outcome happened. It's awful. But I bet if Tyrese Haliburton was sitting here right now, we say, hey, do you regret it? He would say no.
Yeah.
He would tell you no. Do you know what he would regret? If he, I imagine, I know this is how I would feel. Again, I don't want to prescribe my feelings to Tyrese Haliburton, but if this is me, I would regret not playing.
Mm-hmm.
I'd regret if I went, hey, you know what? Now I got this calf. I might hurt my Achilles. You guys get it. I'm going to sit on the bench. I'll cheer you on. Go get him, guys, in game seven of the NBA Finals.
Yeah.
And then you lose, and you're like, hey, man, I could have probably helped.
Yeah.
So it's a horrible, awful, the most unfortunate outcome that nobody wanted.
Yep.
But I saw the immediate reaction yesterday was, fire the Pacers medical staff. Like they didn't tell him they weren't lying to him. They knew. Everybody knew the risk here.
Yep.
It's not Tyrese Haliburton's an idiot. No, man. Tyrese Haliburton's a damn competitor. That's why you play this game, is to play for an NBA championship. One game away from an NBA championship. All those AAU games you played, all the college games, all the early mornings, all the practices, fruits for that moment. And the worst outcome came. And that sucks.
Yeah. I'd even, Securena Bagley in the chat says, I do think this is the last calf strain that players will try to play with.
Mm-hmm.
No, it's not. The same situation happens next year. There's a very good chance a player does the exact same thing.
Do you know why we know this? Because it happened to Kevin Durant 5 years ago, 6 years ago.
Yeah.
And Tyrese Haliburton said, I don't care. So...
you know why we also know this? Because there are football players who go out there with 10 concussions and still play. They still play.
A level of competitive psychopathness. Now, if this is game one of the first round
mm-hmm.
and he's dealing with a calf strain, maybe they handle it differently. But you're 48 minutes away from the final, from hoisting the Larry O'Brien trophy.
Yeah.
I don't blame anyone in this situation. Like, it's just a brutal, awful thing that happened.
Bad things happen.
Yeah, man.
Yeah.
So, I do wonder, our guy, Dr. Nirav Pandya, friend of the program, who is the professor of UCSF orthopedic surgery and the director of sports medicine at Benioff Children's Hospital, said this yesterday. Soft tissue injuries defined these NBA playoffs, which I kind of agree with. Three Achilles tears in the playoffs is not normal. Warriors losing due to Curry's, Warriors losing Curry due to a hamstring, and Denver being impacted by Aaron Gordon's hamstring as well. The NBA has to look at making some changes. So somebody said, what changes would you make? And he said, space out the games in the regular season and slash or decrease the number of regular season games, no back-to-backs, and increasing the duration of time between playoff games. None of that seems, I'm sure there's a technical business thing that matters here that I'm just not, that I'm missing. And I will put my hand up and understand that. If you're the NBA, why are you not like, yeah, you know what? Good idea. We're not going to limit the number of games because I genuinely don't think there's anything that could happen that the league would cut the number of games from their schedule.
Mm-hmm.
But why not just say, okay, hey, we're going to space these games out. We're going to super limit back-to-back. Every team has two back-to-backs a year, whatever it is. And we're going to take this thing into mid-July. What's stopping them from doing that?
It's a great question because I got to be honest, over the last couple of years, they're shortening the days in the season. And they're doing things like adding the in-season tournament in. Just that adds more stress. They elongated the NBA All-Star Weekend. It's no longer NBA All-Star Weekend. It's a week.
Right.
But they also shortened when the date of the season starts. So it used to be like 5 days earlier we'd start. We used to start training camp the last week of September.
Mm-hmm.
Now training camp starts the first week of October. Mm-hmm. And so they took away another week at the beginning of the season. And so they keep compressing the schedule. They eliminated 4 games in 5 nights, but they didn't eliminate 5 games in 7 nights.
Mm-hmm.
So you can play 2, have a day off, play 1, have a day off, play 2 again. And then you can have a day off, play another 2, and you can perpetually be stuck in 5 games in 7 nights.
Yeah.
That happens all the time. Then there's the air travel. And I know they're staying in 5-star hotels and they're
Sure.
But that doesn't matter. You're still your body clock is all messed up. Everything is all messed up.
And I get the travel thing. That's great for, hey, the Kings have to fly to Boston and they're going to stay in Boston. They're going to play against New York and they're going to play against the Nets. They're going to fly. Okay. Like, that's fine. But when it doesn't matter what type of travel you're taking, when you're going to Texas and then Oklahoma City and then Minnesota, and then you got a game down in Atlanta, and then on the way back, you got to stop in Utah. Like, there's no amount of travel that makes that okay.
Nope.
No type of travel that makes that normal. So yeah, man, I'm sure they're trying to, by shortening everything, they're trying to like create urgency, right? We're not going to limit the number of games because that's the thing the NFL has, right? There's 17 games. It's just every game matters so much. And so it's like the NBA is trying to manufacture this by taking the 82 game season, just kind of truncating it.
Mm-hmm.
Like, just going to shorten it just a little bit. And it doesn't, all it does is put additional strain on their players.
Yeah.
And I don't think it's a coincidence that you're seeing these wear and tear injuries on players. You know, with older players, Dame, who's played so many freaking games, so many minutes, like it sucks, but it feels like, man, it's a little bit preventable. Steph Curry hurting his hamstring. Hey, you know what? 37-year-old had a grade 1 hamstring injury. All right, you know, stuff happens. But when you've got three separate dudes with Achilles tears, 3 stars,
yeah,
to boot, and I don't say that because stars matter more, but if you're the league, that puts your red flags up.
Oh, yeah. Yeah. Hey, like 2 years ago, the Kings won 46 games, right?
Uh-huh.
But from on March 20th, they started a road trip, Raptors, Wizards, Magic. So they fly to the East Coast, and that's not even
Toronto, D.C., Orlando.
Yeah, that's not even like... So then they come home and they play 5 games.
Okay.
And then they go back on the road for Knicks, Boston, Nets, Thunder. So between March 20th and April 9th, they had 7 games on the road, 2 trips to the East Coast, And then in the middle of that, they had six games at home. In like a 19-day stretch, you had 13 games. And of those 13 games, two sets of them are on the East Coast. And you know what happened? Malik Monk got hurt, and Kevin Huerter got hurt, and the Kings didn't make the playoffs.
Mm-hmm.
That's like these schedule anomalies, that can't happen anymore. Late in the season, mm-hmm. you're making a team fly to the East Coast twice? It just doesn't make any sense, man. No. So they've got to rework some of that stuff and just be more conscious mm-hmm. of what's happening. Yeah. But, you know, maybe this forces a hand. Like you just lost a lot of money. There's some great players just got hurt.
There is so much more to this than injuries happen.
Yeah.
Like that's the thing that bothers me so much. And I would love to see the NBA take this seriously as a player safety problem. Will they? TBD.
Yeah.
But if this postseason and the fact that injuries kind of defined the entire thing, I don't know whatever will do it. We'll keep talking about what went on yesterday, not only in the NBA Finals, but the Kevin Durant trade.
Yeah.
What does it mean for the West? What does it mean for the Kings? We'll talk about that next. That's James Hamm. I'm Kyle Madsen, and Joe Brazil's with us. We're the Insider, sponsored by Jiffy Lube. This is ESPN 1320, Sacramento sports leader.
You're listening to The Insiders with James Hamm and Kyle Madsen, sponsored by Jiffy Lube on ESPN 1320 and 98.5 HD2, Sacramento sports leader. Back to the Insiders with James Hamm and Kyle Madsen, brought to you by Jiffy Lube on ESPN 1320.
I'm Kyle, he's James, Joe's over there. Jiffy Lube omnipresent. Real quick, before we get to the Kevin Durant trade, I do want to talk about one more thing from the game last night.
No.
Because this has been such a Halliburton injury-focused conversation. What Oklahoma City's defense did yesterday, and you alluded to this earlier, 17 assists and 23 turnovers for Indiana, including 8 assists to 13 turnovers in the second half.
Yeah.
And that run we talked about earlier where Miles Turner hit the 3 to tie to 56, but then Shea 3, Steele, Chet 3, Steele, Jalen Williams 3 to go up 9. It was like from that point forward, it was like watching a pass rush in a 10-point game with 3 minutes left. Where they don't have to worry about the run. They don't have to worry about, you know, reading what the offensive line is doing. Like, no, it's meet at the quarterback.
Yep.
That's when you hear pin their ears back, and that's when you start seeing a quarterback go down 2-3 plays in a row because defense doesn't have to worry about anything other than just getting to the quarterback. That's what that felt like after that run, that little 9-0 spurt. It just, from that point on, it was like OKC's defense was...
Well, they're one of the great defensive teams that we've seen in the last, like, 25 years.
Yes.
They just are. Yep. And they have waves of players to send at you. And not all of them are great offensive players, but I think we saw this balance the whole time between the great offense and the great defense.
Yep.
And then when you lose the great orchestrator of the great offensive team, mm-hmm. it really did sort of take the wind out of their sails. And you look, though, Benedict Mathurin was incredible.
It was like, awesome.
Yeah, it had just an incredible impact on the game.
24 and 13, I think.
But then other guys faded. Like, Nesmith was totally ineffective.
Mm-hmm.
You know, Miles Turner, totally ineffective.
Obi Toppin.
Yeah, Obi Toppin just completely no-showed in the...
Obi Toppin was not a bad man yesterday.
No, he was not a bad man yesterday.
Yeah, it just... And that's where the loss of Tyrese Halliburton matters, because he's one of those guys that just makes the players around him better.
Mm-hmm.
And when it's, hey, Obi, just kind of go drift from the wing to the corner based on where this defender goes and then catch and shoot when the ball comes to you is way different than, hey, Obi, you're gonna have to handle a little bit above the wing. Can you create your own shot? No. Okay, get it over to Neesmith, and now you're going to kind of drift over there. Okay, hey, can you shoot it? It's a little contested. Very, very different sport.
Yeah, yeah. And, like, shout out to Mark Daigneault. His team was so locked in.
They dialed.
Like, absolutely. I think both teams were. I just think, you know, the, like, losing your best player is rough, but I thought both teams were just so dialed in. And the defensive effort, the first, second, third effort
by
OKC on the defensive end was just wild.
Yeah, Chet, for as not effective as he was in Game 6, was outstanding. I think he had 5 blocks.
Yeah, I'm telling you, man, it's the home and road.
Yeah.
Yeah, look at his home and road splits during the playoffs. You can see a total line in the sand of where he's a great player and where he's just like an average player.
Still growing as a player.
Yeah, still trying to figure it out. And that's what the scary thing is about the Thunder. They're just figuring it out. Jalen Williams became a star in the playoffs.
Yeah.
He coming into those playoffs, I think everybody in the league is like, why is he all NBA? And why is he all NBA first team defensive? He's a good player, but why are we jumping steps? And then he showed you why in the playoffs. And you're like, okay,
yep,
that's who you are now. We're good.
It is. Yeah, we got it. All right, speaking of home and road splits, there's a new NBA star who has a new home. Kevin Durant got traded to the Houston Rockets yesterday, a few hours before the game. Houston gets Kevin Durant.
Mm-hmm.
Phoenix gets Jalen Green, Dylan Brooks, the number 10 pick, and 5 second-round picks. I need to know real quick, before we dive into this, we'll talk about, is Phoenix better, is Houston better? Is there a way the Kings can kind of draft off of this? Anyways, how do they land on 5 second-round picks? Do they go, all right, does Phoenix go, we want Jalen Green, Dylan Brooks, the number 10 pick, or Houston says, we'll give you this, and Phoenix goes, no, we need more. And does Houston start going, a second, like more, 2 seconds? No, it's not gonna. 4 seconds? Not really comfortable with that deal just yet. How about 5 second round? All right, fine, you got us. Yeah, we'll take it.
I think it probably happens something like that. Like, again, to get 1 first round pick and then 5 seconds makes a lot of sense because Durant is what, 37?
Mm-hmm. Not under contract beyond next year.
And he will sign an extension with Houston. I think that's what everyone is expecting. Yeah. So there wasn't that threat. The problem that they had is that if a team isn't going to give up multiple firsts, then collecting second round picks is actually a really, really sneaky way to improve your roster greatly.
Yeah.
Because you can use second round picks in a couple of different ways. Number one, you can draft a second round pick. Number two, you can trade second round picks for serviceable rotational players like Jonas Valanciunas and Jake LaRavia, like in a stretch run. So that's another way. The other thing you can do is if you've got a player and you want to dump his contract because you're way over the luxury tax, maybe even over the second apron, you might be able to find a team that's willing to take on a $10, $12 million player if you throw him a couple of second round picks.
Yeah.
And I mean, that's how Oklahoma has built their dynasty.
Mm-hmm.
It's by taking on other teams' bad contracts and their first and second round picks.
Yep.
And then turning those second round picks, sometimes it's like, hey, will you take this $10 million player? We'll give you 2 seconds. It's like, no, we want a first. They're like, we're not going to give you a first. Well, okay, how about this? We'll give you one of our seconds, but we get a first. And the team's like, all right, fine, we'll do that. Like, and that's how OKC amassed this war chest of picks. Mm-hmm. It wasn't just the Paul George for Shea 5 first round picks. Right, that helped. But on top of that, they had all of these other transactions that they had accumulated over the last decade that has led them to some great young players.
Mm-hmm. And they still have like 31 picks over the next 6 drafts or whatever insane thing it is.
Something stupid.
Just so silly. So I think the way that probably goes is Phoenix said, how about Green, Brooks, the number 10, and another first? And then they determined what the value of a first-round pick was in second-round picks.
Yeah.
And they went 5. That's how I think it probably went. All right.
They might have even said, hey, we want 2 more first. And they said, how about we'll give you 5 seconds?
Sure. There's something along those lines.
Yeah, yeah.
So let's start with Houston here. You mentioned earlier that OKC looks like they're going to be around for a long time. In part because of all their young talent, in part because it's really hard to not just trust that Sam Presti, as they go along here, is going to continue figuring out how to build quality rosters around his stars. Is Houston now in that conversation? Are they further into that conversation that they were than they were prior to the KD trade?
They are, because when we got to the playoffs, Jalen Green really fell apart.
Yep.
And he just showed his age. Yep. And the problem is, on a team like that, when you have so many young players, like, you can't have one of them just kind of check out. And mm-hmm. that's what happened. And we can look at the Jalen Green transaction, right? So they signed him to a 3-year, I think, $105 million deal. Is very specifically so they had a $30 million player to trade.
Yep.
Because they weren't enamored with him, and a lot of teams around the league aren't enamored with him because of the same exact thing. I mean, he's electric, and he's a super athlete, and he can really, really shoot the three. And we've seen him, like, walk into Sacramento and just torch the Kings. But at the same time, there's a maturity level that he just, when you have so many of these young players and you're trying to move along, I think this does move Houston to the number two team. They were the number two seed in the Western Conferences last year. They feel more like a true number two seed now.
Yeah, Jalen Green, as a rookie, averaged 17 points a night,
mm-hmm.
then 22, 19.6, and then 21 this year. So you see the talent. Like you said, he jumps out of the gym. He can score it at all three levels. But I think this version of the Houston Rockets, mm-hmm. the one that doesn't have Jalen Green and doesn't have Dylan Brooks and does have Kevin Durant, I think they beat Golden State in that 7-game series.
Oh, yeah.
They just, that is the offensive punch they need. And Kevin Durant, for despite the fact he's 37 and coming off, or not coming off, but and had that Achilles injury in 2019, still a really good player. Still a highly, highly effective scorer. If that's the only thing he needs to do for them, he makes them better.
Oh, he's going to draw a crowd.
There aren't that many. And he's going to do the right thing. He's not going to draw a crowd and then say, I'm going to shoot over three players. He's going to draw a crowd and say, there's Amen Thompson on a back cut.
Mm-hmm.
Or there's Alperen Şengün alone at the nail. Or whatever it is. Houston got dramatically better here.
Yeah, I think so.
And I think if you're looking at teams that, okay, hey, how do they kind of match up? Could they give OKC a series? If Houston's healthy and Kevin Durant doesn't fall off a cliff, which I don't anticipate him doing, Houston is a team that I think defensively could give OKC a very, very real run.
No, I think so too.
They're not in that first tier. OKC is still alone in a tier in the West, but the Rockets very firmly in tier two now.
Well, they're,
if they weren't already,
probably very firmly the best team in tier two.
Ooh. Interesting. I'm going to have to look at that. I don't think I disagree.
Okay.
Because there's, I mean, Minnesota, Denver,
mm-hmm.
probably taking Houston over both of them.
Yeah. I mean, talent-wise.
No, I think you're probably right.
Yep.
All right. We'll talk about Phoenix next. Talk about Phoenix because I think there's a way the Kings might be able to get involved now.
Okay.
Depending on how Phoenix is feeling about their roster and what they kind of want to do. So we'll talk about how the Kings may get involved there, and then we'll talk. ESPN has a bunch of post-finals stuff, including a mock draft of the player that me and Joe absolutely adore. We'll talk about that coming up in the second hour. We're the Insiders. He's James. I'm Kyle. That's Joe. Jiffy Lube sponsors us. Joe, get us out of here.
You're listening to The Insiders with James Hamm and Kyle Madsen, sponsored by Jiffy Lube on ESPN 1320 and 98.5 HD2, Sacramento sports leader.